So everybody's sitting here so quietly, we'll get going. Commissioner Levy is here, not actually here, but in the building. So we'll let him show up when he does. Would call a meeting to order, and we've just met with the new employees, and I know there are a number of them in the room, so welcome again to the port. And sometimes new for new employees, and the new employee meetings that we have means you've been here 3 days, and sometimes it means you've been here a year, so you're all new. I would make one note on the agenda, that agenda item number 2 has been revised in the amount of the contract. The PHC contract has been increased to $762,000 due to increased or higher costs associated with the PDX food court and the addition of Terminal 6 facilities that had previously been the responsibility of ICTSI, which you'll hear more about later in this meeting. Call for a motion and second for the approval of the minutes of the regular commission meeting of February 8th, 2017.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. And ask Bill for the executive director report.
Great. Thank you very much. And I would just note for those of you who maybe haven't been here before that we are now live streaming the commission meeting. So you're not only on the record, you're live on the record. And also a welcome to the new employees in the audience who probably haven't been to a commission meeting before. And so this is kind of a typical show. I think if we asked all of our employees to stand up and leave the room, there'd be 4 people remaining. So you look around and you'll see your port co-workers. And also, as a reminder, on the back table, you'll find an evacuation map. In the event of an emergency, port staff will escort everyone in the room through the doors, down the hall to stairwell 1, and out to the gathering area next to the north parking lot, which is across the road this way from the central utility plant. I also want to acknowledge the safety champions whose pictures have been rotating on the screen. And I'd like to call on Stan Waters right now for this month's safety message.
Well, believe it or not, spring is just around the corner. And with that, obviously, comes a tradition of spring cleaning. And so a lot of times people get outside, they start spiffing up their houses, they start spiffing up their yards, and they start hiring maybe contractors to help them. And so I thought, with spring just around the corner, in fact, March 20th is, believe it or not, the first day of spring, that I'd provide a few helpful tips to people. First of all, do not rush or cut corners when setting up your daily work activities. Use proper lifting techniques, keeping your back straight and lifting with your legs. If you're using ladders, use the proper ladder when assessing elevated areas and never stand on the top rung. Watch out for wet surfaces and wear proper footwear. Keep stairs, landings, and walkways clear of boxes, bags, and other clutter. Use a dust mask for those areas if you're operating in a dusty area. And when using lawn or powered equipment, make sure you have proper safety gear, such as hearing protection, safety glasses, and gloves. And I'd just like to point out on this one, when I see my neighbors out using power equipment and they don't have hearing protection on, that's something really everyone should be doing. And we don't really think about that when we're doing our own work, but that is really critical PPE when you're operating any power equipment. Ensure your equipment has proper safeguards, and ensure you drink plenty of fluids and keep hydrated. And the other thing is, we use a lot of chemicals, and it's really important to read those labels and to read the precautions and instructions on how to use them properly. And then if you are hiring contractors to do maintenance, it's really important to ask them about their safety practices and to make sure that they are following safe work practices if they're working on your property. That's my safety message, but I do have one call out today. I'd like to call out our navigation division, which as of Monday hit their 500th day without a lost time incident. So it's quite an accomplishment.
And thank you very much. And I just want to add something about navigation. On Monday of this week, we provided a boat tour using the Navigation Department's crew boat, which is what they use to get back and forth from the dredge and the other operating equipment. We had two members of Congress, including the subcommittee chair for essentially for the EPA-related activities, and Kurt Schrader, who is congressman here, and then several staff types and myself. So we went out to the dredge base. It's a little challenging to find for people who haven't been there before. And before we headed out to the boat, we had a 10-minute safety briefing. And both members of Congress were extremely impressed by the level of detail in the briefing and walked out of there with a really great impression of the Port of Portland as a result of it. And also didn't trip or stumble and held onto the railings and wore steel toe boots and, you know, the whole thing. So it was really a great accolade for the Navigation Department, which made great strides here recently. Well, today we've got some big news. It's kind of a short agenda, but obviously one item of great interest to all of us relates to Terminal 6. We have an item on the agenda today to essentially terminate our 25-year lease with ICTSI. Return the terminal to us, and you'll get a full brief, of course, on the details of all that. And suffice it to say, this has been a journey, and maybe a saga is probably a better way to characterize it. It has not been without its challenges, but it also has not been without its rewards. Had the port been operating this terminal at the time that Hanjin, which was the only major trans-Pacific carrier calling in this region, gone bankrupt, we would be in very serious financial jeopardy. And so having done the terminal lease in the way that we did 5 years ago, which was, by the way, the very first commission meeting to occur here in this building, we'd have been in big trouble. And so we have an opportunity now. I think it's a kind of a fresh new start. I know our team is excited about it. We're looking forward to it. We came to an amicable parting of the ways with ICTSI. That's also, I think, very important for us. And this will mark, I would say, the beginning of reports and activities and communications about what we're thinking, what we're planning, what we hope for at Terminal 6. We don't have a plan in place at the moment. I think it's important to emphasize that because while we had a tenant, obviously we're not in a position to go out and make plans about what to do with their leasehold. Terminating the lease is the moment at which we're really freely able to think about the future. And I'll just conclude with this, and Keith later will give you a more detailed presentation, and that is that the future of that part of Terminal 6 is going to look a lot different than the past because the nature of the industry is so different today than it was even 5 years ago. So it is a great opportunity for us to fulfill our mission here, but it's a limited opportunity, right? We are going to have to really put our shoulder to the wheel with the stakeholders and with labor, who I see represented here today, glad to have them with us, and make something really good happen for this this region. In airport news, I'm pleased to report that Vince Granato signed the first check request for 13 employees of Latrell's, who operates Pete's in the airport, who completed their six-month transition from a prior PDX employment and were eligible for the incentive program. So as you will recall, we created an incentive for new concessionaires to hire the employees of concessionaires who were leaving. The employee gets $500 and the employer gets $500 and if they stay for a period of 6 months. So kudos to Chris Sarnecki and his team for this program. It was from scratch developed. It's not a simple program to manage, but obviously it's beginning to show some really some success, which we're very pleased about. Hollywood Theater comes to PDX, and if you haven't been out on Concourse C to see it, you should. It is fantastic. It's a former service center from the days when people would bring their 12-pound laptops to the airport and have to find a power supply and then plug it into the internet and get a roll of quarters to provide access, and people just weren't using these service centers in the same way that they were originally intended. And so Hollywood Theater approached us. Our team was creative enough to figure out how to make this happen. We're not going to get rich, but I can tell you the five or six times that I've been out there, the place is full. The film community, particularly people who are making short films in this area, are thrilled to death because they have a new venue, and it's fantastic. The equipment manufacturers and dealers have provided either at cost or on loan some of the finest equipment you'll ever see. I mean, it's really a great setup, and it's always full. So it's a really nice addition to the airport, and it's free. It's free to customers, I guess is probably the best way to put it. Nothing's really free. The PDX Shuttle Bus app is launching this month, which is kind of exciting. And it's just aimed at improving the passenger experience out in the economy lots, which can be a bit challenging. But it'll show next bus arrival and also provides Wi-Fi for folks riding the shuttle buses, which is a nice addition. Last night, we hosted one of my favorite events, which is the PDX Make the Connection event. And it's great because it really is a representative sample of the larger airport family, everybody who's involved in making the airport what it is. We do this annually. People are recognized specifically for contributions that they've made and have been observed to make over the course of the last year, and I'm always impressed by how full the room is. It's an event that people don't want to miss. We had obviously many of our own employees there, but the airlines, the service providers, the concessionaires, CPB, TSA, the whole family represented, and it's just an effort to make sure that everybody recognizes that it takes a family, a big family, to run this airport, and it's a large part of why PDX is the best airport in the United States. March 16th, Alaska starts nonstop service to Orlando, which I think is the longest domestic segment offered out of PDX, and if you fly it, you'll understand just how far that is. It's a long, long trip on a 737 in the middle of row 42, but it's a great service, and it's really, I would say, the last of the major East Coast markets that we've not had access to. We did briefly, and we will again, and so it's actually very exciting. The Port of Portland is now recognized as the number one auto export port on the West Coast of the United States. In 2016, more than 50,000 exports moved through Portland. They're all Fords. They're going to South Korea. They're going to China. It's really a terrific story. You know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, if you'd have said that the United States would be manufacturing cars in the Midwest and selling them in Korea or China, I'm not sure anyone would have believed you. But that's what's happening. Ford is very bullish. You know, despite all the trade challenges and despite the high U.S. dollar, they're very bullish and expect to see these volumes increase significantly. And they have chosen Portland as their point of embarkation. So we expect to see more of it. Over the last 3 years, we've been working very closely with the city of Gresham and have been exploring something we call the Eco Industrial District or strategy for the Gresham Vista Business Park. It's ideally suited because, of course, it literally is a square dimension. We acquired this property from LSI. Because they were not interested in developing it and have worked very closely with the city of Gresham. And, of course, owing to deals that you've approved here over the last several months, business is booming out there, and we're looking at all kinds of opportunities to reduce the carbon footprint of that district overall, getting a lot of support from the tenants, looking at green stormwater management, which is important in this region particularly, and I guess this year in particular. And so we're really excited about it, but we're particularly excited about this relationship with some of the principal developers who are now building out there, Trammell Crow and others, and the work that we've done with the city of Gresham. The port's annual Gateway to the Globe event is going to be held on March 22 this year. Senator Betsy Johnson will be our keynote speaker. If you've ever heard Betsy speak, it'll be a stemwinder. She's never boring, and she has a lot on her mind. She's occupying several very important positions in the legislature this session, and so by that time, she'll have a lot to talk about, I'm sure. She's been a great friend of the port. We also are about to begin a disparity study. This is a kind of it's a complex study and it's a complex subject, but the essence of it is to assess how we're doing with respect to minority contracting, in particular DBEs, disadvantaged business enterprises. And if we can establish disparities, then we are essentially allowed to go further than the current state of the law would allow an organization like us to go in seeking out and awarding contracts to disadvantaged business enterprises. It's expensive, it takes time, and it's really worth doing, and it's served us very, very well in the past. And it's one of the reasons why our record is as good as it is on this subject. It's kind of an odd one because we have to go out and demonstrate that we've got problems in order to be able to address those problems. But I'm really proud of the organization for having done, this is I think our third or fourth of these disparity studies that have occurred since I've been here. And they have proved to be just really a terrific tools. So you'll hear more about that as we come to conclusion. And that concludes my report.
Motion to approve the executive director's report. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I think it's appropriate to add Kristen Leonard has returned as our Director of Public Affairs after having served the governor's office. So welcome back, Kristen. Next, we have an award that is singularly, I think, the most significant award that the port gives away or awards each year, and it's the annual Compass Award. And unfortunately, we're doing this award today without the recipient, Michael Irwin, being here because of a scheduling problem. Michael is the Federal Security Director of Oregon. And I want to provide to you a brief summary of the proclamation that we'll be making in giving this award to Michael. And this is, the Compass Award recognizes an individual or entity that has demonstrated exceptional support for the Port of Portland over the year or years. It was initiated in 2006. Mike has served as Federal Security Director for the State of Oregon at PDX and other Oregon airports since 2005. He manages a staff of more than 700 and is responsible for filling the Transportation Security Administration's mission of protecting the nation's transportation system to ensure freedom of movement for people and commerce. Mike's demonstrated exceptional partnership with PDX that led to unparalleled customer service, as evidenced by Travel and Leisure magazine's awards for Best Domestic Airport, J.D. Power recognition for highest satisfaction for large North American airports, and multiple TSA awards for customer service, including TSA Airport of the Year for the West in 2007. Mike's contributed significant time advocating for PDX at state and federal level in support of local businesses and travelers, including multiple pilot programs that enhance passenger and baggage screening. Mike has given his own personal time and energy to help the port achieve its mission by consistently being available and responsive on the many issues of interest. And I would just add to that that over the last 5-8 years, which has been really important for security changes around airports, Mike has always been very happy to participate so that we understand as commissioners exactly and the staff what exactly is at play and how to best do that security mission and keep customers happy at the same time, all of which has been a great attribute for the airport. So we would like to recognize and thank Mike for his service to the port and the communities that we serve. And I'm going to be giving the plaque to
Tina Burke, right here.
Okay. May,
can I just add one thing? The very fact that an airport is giving an award to the federal security director is really remarkable. These relationships around the country, I know because I travel a lot, I talk to other airport people, are typically very strained. It's a difficult environment. We're the airport owner and operator, but there are so many things that happen there over which we have no control at all. And the reason why things work as well as they do is in large measure due to the fact that Mike and Tina and all of their colleagues really go out of their way to engage us as we do with them. And it is not something we should take for granted because it doesn't work this way in very many other places. And I think Mike gets a tremendous amount of the credit for this, but so does his whole team.
So I do need a motion and second to adopt the resolution of commendation and appreciation to Mike Irwin.
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Congratulations in absentia to Mike. And Tina, I'm going to hand you the certificate. If you'll come forward.
Great.
And on behalf of all of us with the TSA team PDX, we take a great deal of pride in being part of the PDX family.
Great.
So thank you.
Thank you. Well, and Kristen, you're going to do the government affairs legislative update for us.
I am. Good morning. There are several of you I have not had the privilege of getting to work with to date, so I want to introduce myself, Kristen Leonard. I'm returning as the Chief Public Affairs Officer for the Port of Portland, and my plan was originally this morning I'd be here introducing Catherine Williams, who would be sitting next to me, making this presentation. But as things go in Salem, Catherine's actually stuck down there this morning making sure some important work gets done. And so I said I'd be happy to fill in for her. So if there's any questions that you guys hit me with that I can't answer, we'll make sure and get answers to you as quickly as possible. And what I'd like to do as we're going through the slides is kind of create more of a discussion frame. So if questions come up as we're going along, don't hesitate to just holler out and we'll get answers to those questions kind of as we're going along instead of saving them to the end. So first and foremost, I think the last time Catherine had the opportunity to sit down with all of you was probably about a year ago. And I think you were just completing the 2016 legislative session, a shorter session. Typically, it's a few, and I kind of say that rolling my eyes a tad, because there's often a lot of bills that move in the five-week session, a lot of work just to rebalance the budget. And then what we do with state government relations is Catherine will spend kind of that interim time getting out into the community, meeting with legislators in their districts, kind of talking about, here's what the port does, here's the kinds of things that are important to us, what's important to you, elected official, and your respective community. It's a great opportunity for us to really get to spend time and do so kind of in these elected officials' home court, if you will. So that's the work that's happened up until the legislative session started here in February. A couple things that I want to just share with you, some numbers and some changes following the November election. So Governor Brown was elected into her role. Due to the circumstances, that position as a statewide office will be up again in 2 years. So usually it's every 4 years, and this will be a position that will be up for election 2016, and then again in 2018. Representative Tobias Reed is now our state treasurer. We had also Representative Dennis Richardson win the Secretary of State's race, and then Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum won re-election and will serve another 4 years as Attorney General. Three ballot measures passed that have some financial impact to the conversations that we'll be having around all kinds of issues, and we just wanted to share with you. There were three different ballot measures: outdoor school, veterans, measure around CTE, STEM, and high school graduation rates, and those all impacted lottery dollars, their dedicated fund, lottery funds to these different programs, and they impact the lottery dollars that are available for economic development and some of the other programs, and those had a $357 million impact to the lottery funds available. This is not, you know, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. It just, we want to make sure you're aware of, that's one of the items that we're looking at as we're taking a look at the issues important to the port. Democrats retain control of both chambers, the House and the Senate. Democrats kept their 35-25 advantage in the House. The Republicans picked up a seat in the Senate, so it's 17 Democrats, 13 Republicans. And just to give you a sense, and I know that many of you spend quite a bit of time in Salem, it's really always fascinating. There are 14 new members, actually 15 now, 14 or 15 new members that are just starting their tenure in the legislature. That's a lot of new education. You look around that building and you think about that kind of turnover. That's a lot of people that we need to get in, spend time with, and really share with them what it is we do, what the port's all about. All right. Session started February 1st. They are setting a target date for late June to wrap things up, but then their constitutional deadline, I want to say, is the 14th or the 10th of July. So they have to be done by July 10th. All right, on to budget. The governor comes out with her recommended budget in early December, and that budget has kind of set in motion, I would say, a lot of focus. There is a $1.7 billion shortfall that the legislature is grappling with right now, and that's out of approximately $20 billion as the state lottery and general fund budget, just to give you some context. So to say that's kind of the talk of the town is a bit of an understatement. Elements of that, there are kind of how the legislature is planning on approaching this. They started having ways and means hearings out in the community very early. This is a bit unusual. They came forward in mid-January with their budget framework, and a budget framework assuming no new revenue, assuming that everything would be cuts to education, human services, healthcare, all of that. And that, I think, started the dialogue that's going to be necessary to move forward. In the world of healthcare, just to give you some context, about two-thirds of the budget shortfall is with the expansion of the Medicaid population, and about one-third are increased PERS costs. So there will be a lot of conversations moving forward as to what all of that looks like. But to share with you what in the world of the budget the Port of Portland actually really focuses on, $10 million was in the budget to jumpstart the sampling and data collection for Portland Harbor. That is lottery bonding money, or not lottery, bonding money that we want to use so that we can move forward with some sampling in the harbor. $11 million for regional solutions, our partners in many of our programs and a lot of our work. $10 million for levy certification. $10 million for 25 different brownfield remediation cleanup sites. $71 million for Connect Oregon. This is an increase, if I recall correctly, from the last biennium. And so Connect Oregon is very important to us as it relates to many of these infrastructure projects. And $50 million to fully recapitalize the Special Public Works Fund. All right. Moving right along. So some of the hot topics that are percolating, and this is only a small, picture of a lot of conversations going on there. Transportation funding, I'll speak a little bit more to this later, but there is additional revenue needed as it relates to fully funding a transportation package. That is part of the conversation. It has been a conversation in the works, as many of you know, for the past 3 or 4 years, and there's a lot of focus on getting this taken care of here this time around. There's conversations about housing. What does that look like moving forward, and what's the state's role? Workplace, I would say workforce kind of issues. There are conversations around pay equity. Scheduling, some of those topics are percolating in the legislature. Transparency, public records. We are a public entity. These are always issues that we follow and watch very closely, along with contracts procurement for public agencies. And then there's a lot of conversation, and it'll be interesting to see what types of issues really come from this desire to really the connectivity between rural and urban Oregon, the issues that matter to both of us. Certainly the transportation package is part of that, but there's some other work being done around water, other infrastructure, those sorts of issues. So that will continue to percolate as well. All right, so the Port of Portland's 2017 state legislative agenda. As I mentioned before, transportation, this is what Catherine and many at the Port are going to be spending a lot of time working on here this session. We will be working as proponents of the Connect Oregon package and really advocating for that moving forward, and that comes out in the legislative budget. Transportation funding package, I mentioned that earlier, we're going to be very involved. Trade and logistics, aviation, all of these issues we're following closely, we're engaging when necessary, and sharing information with legislators. Real ID, I want to point out, this is an important one, and it's an issue that I think maybe isn't quite on everyone's radar like it should be yet. And we see one of the things that we can really be doing is helping folks focus on the impacts of if we don't do anything about Real ID. So this is the Federal Real ID Act, which requires the state to upgrade driver's licenses to meet the new security guidelines. We are currently under a federal waiver right now, keeping our same system and licenses, but that will sunset, I want to say, end of June, beginning of July. And so we need to, this will become a very serious issue for PDX if we don't have this figured out by January 1, 2018. So we'll be spending a lot of time on Real ID.
Just so everybody is clear about that, what happens in June is that the existing Oregon driver's license would no longer be eligible as an ID at security checkpoints. So
and I think, Bill, if I'm correct, Catherine said that in the state of Oregon, 11% of Oregonians actually have a passport at this point in time. So you think about that, just thinking about the numbers and what that means as it relates to the important work we've got to do and that we want to make sure that people can get where they want to go. So this is a place that I think the port will take a bit of a leadership position just in keeping the conversation moving forward.
Sounds like a communications nightmare if it doesn't work.
Yes, it does. I'm highly motivated for us to get this figured out. That's exactly right. So moving on to the environment, we continue to do a lot of work with Portland Harbor, of course. As you all know, we've got partners in that, both business partners, but also our government partners. The state has, I would say, many roles in this conversation. We will continue to work with them, the city of Portland and others on Portland Harbor as it relates to the legislature moving forward. We also want to work with leadership in the legislature on passing reasonable implementation of legislation around clean diesel and also helping to try to guide the investment of the Volkswagen settlement monies. The legislature, it's $70 million. The legislature actually has to authorize the use of those Volkswagen settlement dollars, and we will be part of those conversations, we hope. Economic development, the recapitalization of the Special Public Works Fund for, this is public funding or funding for publicly owned facilities that support economic and community development in the form of loans and grants to municipalities at the direction of the Infrastructure Finance Authority. Sorry, I had to read that, but I'm still learning exactly what this group does, but we will be engaging on these conversations as well. And then I already mentioned brownfield redevelopment infrastructure. We are engaging on seismic resiliency. There's a lot of attention going to this in the legislature, but also as a transportation package is being talked about, there's also a lot of conversation around our seismic resiliency as it relates to bridges and some of our other infrastructure. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the levy reaccreditation. So that's kind of the end of the slide presentation. I wanted to add a couple things and then take any questions you may have. One of the ways that we really approach from the Port of Portland, the state legislature, is it's not often that we will have a piece of legislation that is the Port of Portland's bill. We really take a lot of pride in doing our work in Salem collaboratively with coalitions, bringing people together and working together on outcomes that are good for us, but good for the rest of our community. I would characterize this session as kind of that mentality on steroids. We do not have a bill that is our bill. This is all going to be coalition work, whether it's the transportation package or diesel or levy reaccreditation. And so I just want you all to have a sense, kind of as we're talking about our role with the communities and connecting with our partners. We spend a lot of time doing that in Salem. And also just to thank all the port staff here. They get calls at all hours, day and night, needing, you know, someone to look over a bill or understand what an amendment means. And we just want our colleagues to know how much we appreciate them. So, any questions?
Thank you. Questions? Comments?
I have one, and it's more historical. I appreciate the detail on the presentation. Yeah. Thank you. As you talked about the sort of legislative focus areas for the port, they were really tied to business interests and activities. Mm-hmm. Is there a secondary set of considerations? I'm very curious as to whether there's a social responsibility portfolio. If there are issues that may not be strategically tied to business interests, but speak to the need of the greater good. If we were looking at things like education or housing or criminal justice disparities, I mean, there's no way to not have those issues sort of bubble up in front of you. What's the approach that the port is taking to being a player in those? Because it's a large,
it's a large agenda and a large package. So to give a little context about the way some of those issues have played out in the last couple sessions, there's been what I'd characterize as the Fair Shot Agenda. This is an agenda that's put together by all kinds of advocates from the community to really dive in and stand together on a larger block of legislation. And to your point, it's legislation dealing with housing and public safety and education, healthcare. So in my experience, and I do have to admit to the fact that I was here for a year and a half. I disappeared for a year and a half, and I'm now coming back. So I don't know what the conversation has been leading up to the 2017 session. But historically, we have not joined in with a coalition on a block of legislation like that. But where we can offer support or assistance on issues that feel that they are appropriate to our mission, we certainly have worked with partners and shared our perspective. So,
And I understand that voting on blocks is probably not the approach that most entities would take.
You bet.
But there's a need to be intentional about those things that you can support and to be very sort of visible in that support. And I would hope that that would be a part of this strategy going forward.
I would love to spend more time talking about this. I think it would be a great conversation.
And I would say to that point, Bobby Stedman's not here today.
Yeah.
She's away from the office. But I think that has in the past fallen within her purview as well to make sure that we've got a large group of employees as well as just the larger kind of good of public interest. Mm-hmm. And she and you and I think those of us on the commission who have questions should definitely raise this because this is a work in progress. The legislative agenda, I'm sure, changes over the next 6 months and needs to attend to all kinds of different things. So thank you for that.
That's great.
I just add a thought as well, and I think this is you've raised a really useful subject, and I think it would also be a great topic for the commission retreat whenever that next occurs, because, you know, this is an appointed body. We're a municipal subdivision of the state, and I saw firsthand, I guess, recently the difference between our structure and Seattle, with the Port of Seattle, which is has a similar set of responsibilities, but one big difference, and that is their commissioners are elected. And so the five, I think it is, elected commissioners of the Port of Seattle took a public position on the president's order on immigration, the original one, and felt comfortable doing that because they are accountable to the citizens who elected them. And I think it's a worthy conversation when you start getting off of the sort of the core mission of the port to just have a candid conversation about how and where and when and how often and how do we integrate that in the larger body of work that we do, because it's obvious that these issues are going to play a larger role in the fabric of the Oregon political process going forward than they have historically. And so I think we probably need, and I say that because I'll be gone, but I do think it's a worthwhile conversation for the commission to think about how to do this and what's appropriate.
Yes. Really, and it ties to this about the Real ID. As I understand mm-hmm. it, there isn't a technical problem with the driver's licenses as issued here in Oregon, except that they are available to undocumented people. Is that the reason why we need a waiver?
You know what? What I'd like to do, because I don't know all the details. I mean, my understanding is our current identification does not meet the new standards set forth by the feds. But what I don't know is technically all the details. So what I'd like to do, if I could, is add this, either get some information sent to you or add this to the list for a future day so that we can actually dig in and have some experts come and spend some time talking about it.
Thank you.
The Real ID issue, the heart of it is that Real ID, as it's prescribed under federal law, will make it more difficult for undocumented people to get a driver's license. And so a lot of states, we're not alone, I think there are maybe 20 or something, who chose not to do this. And, you know, we've got a waiver, but not for long, and there are going to be consequences. So it's worth knowing more about.
Yeah,
I would not say that a fix is a slam dunk in the legislature this time. It's also expensive.
It is, yes, because it's transitioning an entire system. And so I just think this would be a really valuable conversation to dive in more deeply, and I want to be careful about not saying, I know enough to be dangerous at this point in time, so thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Relative to that question, either to you or Bill, did you say that come July the 1st, the current driver's license, as we know it, is no longer going to be valid at the port entry?
No, our waiver, basically the sunsets. We have a waiver from the federal government right now. It sunsets in June, July, but it won't be till January 1st, 2018, is my understanding, that they would stop allowing people to board an airplane with the wrong ID. So our waiver lasts through the legislative session, and this was a request from the state, hey, at least let the legislature come together, see if we can set in motion some fixes. There's a gap there by which we will no longer have a waiver, but they won't stop people at the door. If that makes sense,
January,
is my understanding.
Next year, is that
January 1, 2018 is when they would stop people at the door.
What are the port's current plans relative to that?
That's what we're working on with the legislature.
A lot of food and beverage.
How much time?
No, I realize. So, and I think to your point, Commissioner, it is why I wanted to point out that item on the slide, because it feels like something that it is a very big, very expensive program. And I think right now what's happening is there are a lot of folks saying, oh, someone needs to take care of that. And I think it's going to be a space that we as the port find ourselves
yes.
kind of pushing and leading to make sure that it doesn't, the deadline doesn't come and go, and we find ourselves
with problems.
One
more confirmation.
Problems.
You said earlier about 11.5% of the Oregon total population has or does not have. Has.
And that was
very low.
Very low.
It's not
yeah.
Right. Sufficient.
So I hope I have that number right, but it was 11-12%.
Right. Yeah.
It's very
That's
low.
That's a national, I mean, it's not particularly low, actually. It's, yeah.
Gotta get start working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work to do.
Okay, so you'll be back.
I'm coming back.
Okay.
Tomorrow
Good.
And the next day, now you can't get rid of me. Thank you very much.
Put a few things on your plate. So,
exactly.
We'll look forward to seeing you again. The first agenda item is approval of the advisory group
that will recommend finalists to the commission on the role of executive director. And given Bill's comments, he keeps going back to June 30th, that he is retiring. So this is an appropriate time to continue discussion about our process in identifying and hiring a new executive director. And part of that process, and is public, is the assignment designation of four commissioners and four non-commissioners to an advisory group that will do the first review with our recruiters of the candidates for the executive director position. And that's already in process. And then they, that advisory group, will make the recommendation of finalists to be decided upon by the full commission. And the people that were seeking approval here of the appointment to this task are four non-commission members. And those are John Molas, Andrew Colas, Andrea Durbin, and Catherine Lamb. And the resumes, short, brief bios of those four people are on our website. They're available online. They've been up and been announced for at least a couple of weeks, if not longer. And it is a collection of people. Some of you know them. Some of you know some of them. They represent, most importantly, a group with a lot of experience in leadership. And in that leadership experience that they've had, they will contribute along with our four commissioners in that first review process of selecting someone who is an excellent leader for the port. They won't necessarily have firsthand experience, they being the advisory group, each one of them firsthand experience with the court's or the port's business. They may know part of the port's business, but their function really is the review of candidates and recommendation of the appropriate finalist from a leadership perspective. It's actually a significant commitment of time by those four people as well as our commission members. I think they each have distinguished themselves in both their communities as well as in their business efforts. And I think that that is also important that we have representatives who have, or members of the advisory group, that actually have participated in community activities, community groups, and can give us a flavor, which perhaps we haven't always had in the past, of what's important in the community, not just from the perspective of a single interest person, but a person who's got a fair amount of breadth to their own experience and activities in the community. So I think these are terrific. These four people will be terrific additions to the advisory group and carry out those functions quite capably. So I would also want to open this process to public comment. So if there are any members in our audience that wish to speak to the appointment of these four members of the advisory group, please let me know. And I know we have two people who have identified a wish to testify on the first agenda item. And I will call those two people first, and then anyone else who wishes to speak, you can let us know. B. Marston from Unite Here. Good morning.
Good morning. Greetings, Port Commissioners. I am B. Marston. I'm a volunteer organizer and shop steward for Unite Here Local 8. I work at Portland 5 Centers for the Arts, right here in downtown Portland. Thank you for letting me speak. I am a union member from the rank and file, not a paid staffer. I work at Portland 5, which is a Metro-run facility. My employer, Aramark, is a subcontractor, much like many of the companies who manage food and beverage here. When I speak to the Metro Council, they put us at the top of the agenda. This says to us that our concerns are important to the council and our voices are welcome. The port, on the other hand, has not done as well. I've come here many times, and I've been in several situations where workers were made to wait 2 hours or even three. Putting us at the bottom of the agenda puts a hardship on workers who are low income, have busy schedules, and don't have 3 hours to spend waiting for a chance to speak for 3 minutes. It effectively silences the voices of workers here. I got a call recently. Every few months I get this call. It's someone from my union saying that once again, our comrades at the airport are facing unemployment. People in the industry ask me all the time, is the airport a good place to work? And I have to answer, not yet. When workers live in uncertainty, I can't say these are good jobs. With our union's endorsement, my employer, Aramark, has kept the food and beverage contract at Portland 5 for many years now. Through the process of collective bargaining, we are making these not just jobs, but good jobs that people can support their family on. It's my only job, which 10 years ago, I was told this is a part-time job. It will never be enough to support someone. And yet it is because of my union. I don't think you see that kind of longevity elsewhere in my industry, and I bet you don't see it here at the airport. I wonder how long I would have lasted. Would I have lasted 14 months here at the airport even? I wonder. I think having continuity in my job personally has enriched my life and greatly reduced my anxiety about the future. And Commissioner, to speak to your point, I think the port does have a responsibility, not just to business interests, but to the people of Oregon. And not just when it crosses over or overlaps with business interests, but when it actually benefits the people of Oregon. I'm asking you today to do the right thing by your workers here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And do you have any questions?
Any questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Stefan Moritz.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Stefan Moritz. I'm also with Unite here, Local 8. And I wanted to add a little bit to the theme of accessibility raised by Bea just now, because it has an important impact on the kinds of decisions you make here at the Port of Portland. The interests of workers, the desire of folks to transform this public airport from a place of low wage, sometimes, oftentimes, unfortunately, poverty wage jobs, to a place where living wage jobs are the norm, sometimes or often we feel gets drowned out by the talking points that are given to you. For example, and I want to give you a few examples and feel out how we can change that. We met with the governor a few months ago to discuss the airport, and she encouraged us very strongly to meet with you you guys to talk about this issue. She specifically mentioned you, Commissioner Alexander, as a new commissioner, and really encouraged us. You should sit down with these folks and have an in-depth conversation about what you feel is going on, that they have a chance to listen to workers and really feel what is going on out there. Unfortunately, we haven't had that chance yet. We still very much would like to do that. When we talk to some others, some of you all, we heard sort of that we should rather testify in public, right? Like that maybe it's not the right thing to do to meet, you know, face to face with workers in a sit down meeting where we have the time to actually really dive into the issues. Testifying in public session, as Bea mentioned, sometimes means that people have to take hours out of their day, have to wait 2, 3, 4 hours to actually get to say what they need to say. So that's one. Now moving on, I think at the last commission meeting, we heard from you, President Carter, that the issues we're bringing up are issues that you're well aware of and that we've talked about them. And I agree with that. I think, though, that those issues bear repeating and are very important to bring up again and again and again. Because we think what's going on here is against actually the stated goals of the Port of Portland of creating good family wage jobs in our community. Early next year, it's more than likely that restaurant workers, and that's just an example, right? But the restaurant workers who work at Rogue and Roses lose their jobs, and as part of losing their jobs, lose their health care that they have fought to win from their employers, or from their employer in that case. I don't need to tell you what that means in the current turmoil that's going on in the healthcare market, and it is very much in question if people will, you know, be able to regain coverage otherwise, and what kind of dramatic impact that could have on them personally or on their families. Again, this goes against your principles, against your stated goals, and against what Oregon and Portland stand for. We think fixing the concessions program should be on the top of the new executive director's agenda. I was surprised not to see the voice of low-wage workers as part of the advisory committee that you're setting up. I did, however, notice that a concessions employer is part of that group, and that's a good thing, but it is only a good thing if there's balance in the selection of the committee members. Because, you know, as it is, it sort of shows that the concerns of workers are still not taken as seriously as they should be. So over the coming weeks and months, we'll again be reaching out to you. And we hope that the answer is going to be a different one than just say, come to public session and say the same thing over and over again. So thank you for listening. We're really looking forward to having a serious conversation about all this. Thank you.
Before you step away, let me just say, I hope that one in whatever comments I made the last time, last mm-hmm. month's meeting when you were here, weren't taken as an indication that I don't think you should be here telling us, keeping us current on what's happening in the concession areas in the airport, because it certainly wasn't intended that way, if that's how it was understood. I think also the points that you raise, I would ask our staff, I think it's appropriate, it's been some time since we've had a current data assessment as far as wages being paid in the airport, both for union workers and non-union workers, and the economic status of the workforce, whether our direct employees actually much more about our indirect employees, the contract workers, and also the status of workforce turnover. I mean, we hear a lot of references to numbers, but I think, to your point, it's incumbent on us to keep current as to what's happening with the workforce in the concession. So I would ask our staff to make sure that we are current on both pay and turnover.
I think that's a desirable goal. I also think that some of the mechanisms of constant churn and turnover, and you know, this example with the Rogues and Roses workers is a good one, right? They have achieved a certain level. If you take that away from them and they have to start over again, they have to start over again, right? And so I've seen airports where, in that case, through collective bargaining, the standard was built over 20 and 30 years, right? And total compensation for some workers at SeaTac Airport, and they're non-tipped workers, right, is $25 an hour, right? We don't see that here at Portland Airport because of the churn that goes on. So I think data is always important. We like real news.
Yeah, no. I think it's important to take into account in gathering that data what it reflects and what it doesn't. But it's hard for us. I speak for myself here. Mm-hmm. Hard to know exactly what's happening on the ground without having current information from all sides of that equation, and we need to do that.
Yeah. Point well taken. I think that should be done. We also hear the real stories of folks and how it impacts their lives, right? Which should is an important part of that. And actually, I just wanted to add your point about having a discussion about how the port can show leadership on issues that go on that maybe are not directly considered the core business of the port. what happened in Seattle was very meaningful for our Muslim members because they, and we have many of them, and you know, when the airport rallies were going on, the port officials, elected officials, actually going out there and standing up and saying, this is wrong, right? We think that this is not how you treat people in our community. One commissioner actually pulling people off a plane from getting deported, who then the next day were released because the deportation wouldn't have been justified, meant a lot for folks in the community who work at the airport every day to see that they're represented by their elected officials. So it makes a big difference, and I think it's an important point to consider. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment from the public on the advisory group? Right. We'll close that hearing, if not. And any questions, comments from the members of the commission before I ask for a motion and second? Is there a motion and second to approve the appointees to the advisory group?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. And thank you for your comments. Second agenda item is going to be introduced by Vince, and it's a janitorial services contract. Good morning.
Good morning. We're here to request approval to enter into a contract with Portland Habilitation Center, or PHC, to provide janitorial services. We've been with had PHC provide services for us since 1996, and they do work for us at Hillsborough, Troutdale, the PDX Food Court, Marine Terminals, Navigation, really across the spectrum of the port facilities. This current contract was effective April 1st, 2007, and expires March 31st of this year. PHC is considered a qualified rehabilitation center, or QRC, and Craig's going to talk about the process that we've gone through to work with PHC and why we're recommending them going forward.
Thank you, Vince, and good morning, everyone.
And left side.
That is there, left you side. Go. Oh, there we go. As Vince mentioned, the port has contracted with PHC for janitorial services at all of its facilities since 1996. A separate janitorial services contract with PHC for Portland International Airport and Port Headquarters offices was approved in 2013. While Oregon's Public Contracting Code requires public contracts to be awarded by competitive bid or proposal in most cases, there are certain exceptions. One of the most important exceptions, in my opinion, is the rule that requires public agencies to procure goods and services from qualified rehabilitation facilities, or QRFs, when the goods or services required are offered by a QRF, provided the product or service is of the appropriate specification and available within the period required by the public agency. Qualified rehabilitation facilities exist to encourage and assist Oregonians with disabilities to achieve maximum independence through gainful, useful employment. PHC has provided nearly 60 years of broad-based educational, training, and job opportunities with full union benefits for thousands of people with developmental, physical, and mental disabilities. QRFs are nonprofit organizations, dedicated to improving the lives of disabled Oregonians. Their contract pricing is closely monitored, audited, and approved by the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. The contract we are presenting today for approval is structured as a 7-year agreement set to expire in 2024. Reviews of cost and service level will be undertaken annually, and any change in cost must be approved by the state. During a given year, PHC must employ individuals with disabilities for not less than 75% of the total work hours of direct labor required for provision of the services. Between this contract and the airport headquarters contract, PHC employs more than 110 employees working in port facilities, including site managers and supervisors. While there are other QRF janitorial service companies in the greater Portland area, none employ a workforce large enough to service the port's needs. The QRF program is a state set-aside program and is not meant to be or recommended to be competitively sourced. Providing stable and meaningful employment for disabled Oregon citizens is one of the hallmarks of the program. PHC employees belong to the Service Employees International Union Local 49 and receive competitive living wages with full benefits. I have personally been inspired by the attitude and work ethic that PHC employees display, and I believe the services that we receive from these hardworking individuals is unsurpassed. As stated earlier, we are requesting approval of a 7-year agreement. Staff requests approval of the executive director's recommendation, and I would take any questions you might have.
Just one quick question. Thank you very much. In the context of what I just heard prior to you saying, you know, from the couple of public comments, do you know the average wage paid, let's say, for example, by the hour by PHC to its workers?
Oh, I don't have the exact current figures, but I believe it's in the range of $17 to $20 an hour. I believe that's about the range right now. I would not want to be held accountable for that, though.
We can find out.
They are represented by SEIU Local 49 as well, so they have a contract and have had for a long, long time.
And I could certainly get that information to you.
Well, you look into those things as well, right?
Oh, yes.
And provide health care also?
They do.
In the future, I think it might be helpful. I think it would be helpful that we have contracts like this. We have, as commissioners, some idea of what the wage and benefit package is. So, you know, the contract's, $750,000, give or take, and how much of that's wages.
Okay, absolutely. We can do that. Thank you.
Yeah, good idea.
Just quick clarification. Is it a 7-year contract or 7-year period renewable each year?
It's
option renewals.
We are actually requesting approval of a 7-year agreement.
Okay.
Other questions? Comments? Thank you. Is there a motion and second to approve the recommendation?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Recommendation approved. Thanks very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
And we appreciate the airport being maintained as it has been. Keith, you're doing the final item here, which is the Terminal 6 lease termination.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Get to introduce my own item. It's kind of weird. Feel alone. So this is we're asking your authority to enter into a termination agreement of the lease between Port and ICTSI. And I've got a few slides here. They're divided really in three pieces. One is kind of the background, how we got here. Right in the middle is really the guts of the agenda item, and then the next steps. And hopefully it all makes sense here. So, and I know some of you have a deep understanding of our history, and some of you are pretty new to the commission. So I do want to take a minute and provide some overview for you. So when we talk about Terminal 6, we're really talking about a 419-acre complex. It's really a massive marine terminal complex with lots of different marine uses. In various transportation infrastructure and assets. So on the upriver outside of the red leasehold area that's shown here is the Honda lease, roughly 60 acres. That's the Honda imports. There are rail facilities there for the movement of autos to and from the terminal. On the downstream portion is auto warehousing. Company. This is roughly 120-acre leasehold. There's another 18 acres across the street that's literally under construction as we speak. The auto business, as you know, has been growing So AWC handles the Hyundai imports and the Ford exports. The rail lines run along adjacent to both the container facility as well as serve the auto facilities. And then within the leasehold itself, we've got really three berths, even though it shows four. We don't have a berth 606 yet. I'm going to actually use my mouse here instead of the pointer. So berth 603 historically always been a general cargo facility, mix of different marine uses there. And when we think about what to do in the future, having the versatility of berth 603 is an attractive opportunity for us. Berth 604 and 605 and the yard area for berth 606, obviously we could build out a berth 606 here, and that's on the long range plans if ever there was a need to do it. We've never really had the need to do that. We've always had, you know, more than enough room for the container business. But really the container business and those operations have operated from those two berths, 604 and 605, and then the yards behind those berths. You've got the admin building, you've got the gate, maintenance shops, and probably the most underutilized piece of infrastructure at Terminal 6 is the intermodal rail facility, which we've, over the history of having a container business, we've never really consistently activated. There have been a few points in time where we've had rail operations, but it's an attractive piece of transportation infrastructure that we in the future would love to put to good use. So background, and again, I'll try to move fairly in summary fashion. There's a lot to our story and kind of how we got here. We've operated a business here for the containers since the mid-1970s, really when the other West Coast ports were also getting into the container business. You know we're a niche port. We've always been a niche port. And two big reasons for that are market size. When you look at the other large container ports on the West Coast, LA Long Beach, the Bay Area, Port of Oakland, and the Seaport Alliance, which is Seattle and Tacoma, you know, much bigger consumer populations drawing a lot of imports into their market from Asia, and carriers definitely like those imports. It's higher value cargo. We are a different market than that. We're much more of an export market. We're a much smaller consumer population. We have, we believe, a critical mass of cargo to justify container service directly into T6. But it's a much more narrow niche. It always has been, and over the last few years becomes an even more narrow niche into the future. And part of that is we're a river port. We're 105 miles from the ocean. We're on 43 feet of draft, and the ships keep getting bigger. The average size of a container ship today is about 8,000 TEU. In 2009, it was about 4,000 TEU, 20-foot equivalent units, kind of the unit of measure containers in the industry. We operated the terminal when all other West Coast ports entered into landlord leases, and that happened during that, I'd say the other ports did that throughout the 80s and the 90s. The ocean carrier companies themselves took a lot of proprietary leases at the other West Coast ports, and it's not that we didn't want that type of business model because it would have shielded the port from financial risk. We just couldn't achieve that in the market. And until we found ICTSI, we spent the better part of 2007, 2008 in a global market solicitation to find a terminal operator that would take on a lease. By then, we were our financial model was very much in jeopardy. We did not have a sustainable way to continue to be the operator of the facility. We were fortunate enough at that time in 2011, it started really in 2010, to enter into a 25-year lease with ICTSI. The first year of operations went very well. Volumes were good, productivity was good, and you know, a lot of times you hear about productivity.
The unit that of measure that people use is crane moves per hour, and so 25 to 28 moves per hour is a good, healthy metric on the West Coast. And during that first year, ICTSI was actually starting to hit some records on crane moves per hour. In the summer of 2012, all of that changed. A labor dispute over who gets to handle the plugging and unplugging of refrigerated containers. I know you all know the story here. Historically, that's been the jurisdiction of the Electrical Workers Union. Under the port's operation of the facility, the ILWU felt like now that there's a lease, that should be their jurisdiction. ICTSI disagreed with that, and so started a legal dispute that lives on today, as it has been appealed through various litigation channels. We then hit a period between 2012 and 2015 where the productivity dipped significantly, and tensions between labor and management, very fair to say, grew. The carriers hung with us during that period, even though the productivity wasn't very good. But all that ended when the West Coast contract, this is the contract between the employer group, the Pacific Maritime Association, made up of private sector terminal operators, carriers, stevedoring companies, and the labor group, the ILWU. This is their West Coast contract that governs labor across all of those ports. That contract lapsed in July of 2014. And with that, we lost the ability to arbitrate various disputes that happen along the way in the terminal. And on our terminal, a lot of that was those disputes were common. And what happened was ships were left at berth a lot longer than they should have been, and ultimately Hapag-Lloyd and Hanjin left the market in February of 2015. And with that, we pretty much lost all of our business. Westwood, which was a monthly call, much smaller niche service, hung in there through May of 2016 until they discontinued their service. And so what we have today is an ongoing litigation, primarily between ICTSI and the ILWU. Those cases are sitting in the DC Circuit right now. Those are appeals, and it could take a few years before there is kind of light at the end of the litigation tunnel. And so that's really the context for the discussions that we entered into starting in December with ICTSI about if there's a mutual way to get out of this long-term lease. I'm going to quickly segue to one other point I'd like to make here, and that's all of the interim work. Interim meaning the period, hopefully, between having carrier service at T6, not having service, and getting service again. So the governor launched the Trade and Logistics Initiative. This is a collaboration between the port, the Department of Agriculture, ODOT, Business Oregon, large-scale stakeholder, statewide effort. There's more than 1,000 companies that have touched T6 in some way over the last several years. Lots of shipper outreach and a lot of interim solutions to help, particularly the it's not so much the larger importers that we're worried about. It's the small to medium size agriculture export companies where the marginal cost increase for moving your container up into the Puget Sound is a big issue. And so a lot of these interim measures have been focused on those small to medium sized companies throughout Oregon. The Matchback program is really a great idea that the port spearheaded. Matchback meaning that when you have import full containers coming into a particular geography, instead of having those containers go back empty, you've got an available container pool there to fill with agriculture exports and more efficiently manage equipment and the supply chain. Lowe's Distribution Center is a great partner of ours on that Willamette Valley Matchback Program. Additional rail service into Boardman, additional rail service between Portland and Seattle. So giving shippers modal choice so they're not beholden to trucking. And the, you know, the difficulty with trucking, particularly from certain points, Southern Willamette Valley is a great example. When you make it through congestion in Portland and you get up into the congestion in the Puget Sound and you're waiting at the gate, you're going to miss your truck hours, and you're going to have to probably have a substitute driver at some point along that trip, and the costs go up and the schedule issue is affected. So those are a lot of the interim solutions, a lot of the outreach work that has gone on with our shippers, and I'll say the legislature, various committees, even this session, very active set of issues focused on these interim measures that started with the loss of service at T6. So now I'm going to segue to the really the meat of the agenda item. At a certain level, this is a fairly straightforward proposition. We began discussions in December with ICTSI. Their desire to be relieved of their obligations under the lease, our willingness to work on that scenario, provided that we have the financial and operational resources out of the deal to be able to move into the future. And we feel like this proposal that's in front of you achieves that and really allows us to have an opportunity to push reset and to re-envision what our future business is going to look like at T6. So under our recommendation here, the port would receive $11.45 million. This represents about two and a half years of future rent coming from ICTSI. The prepaid rent that they've already given to us for this year would accrue to our benefit if, with your approval today, they would not receive the benefit of more than $1 million of that prepaid rent that they've already made for this year, because of the fact that we will take over the premises for April, May, and June. Most notably, and I think most importantly, all of the rolling stock equipment. We have 190 different pieces of equipment out there, a lot of it very large. These are the reach stackers, up into 24, 25 reach stackers, and all of the vehicles that are required to move containers, the chassis pool, all of that, which is really critical to ever standing up a future container operation. The market value of that equipment is $8 to $10 million. We've had an ongoing dispute over reimbursables. Many of you will recall the lease has the port as a service provider for security and for facility and crane maintenance. The lease basically says we get reimbursed for our costs, and along the last 5 years, ICTSI has paid those bills, if you will, but they have disputed some of those costs. And that basket of dispute was up to $2.4 million, and all of that gets resolved with this proposal. Not necessarily a part of the agenda item, but an important note, our staff team, we have a transition team that is fully formed. They had boots on the ground, if you will, on March 2nd, last Thursday, to do a preliminary but thorough inspection. We feel very comfortable with our knowledge about the assets, the handback of the premises. We've been a maintenance provider, and we've had our people on the ground out there the entire time, and we feel comfortable that what we're getting back is in a similar condition from what we gave to ICTSI at the beginning of the lease. And so finally, with your approval today, we would execute the documents, and the lease would act, the closing of this this proposal would happen on March 31st, and we would take over in April. I'm going to move to the next slide and just talk about next steps. So formal, with approval today, formal inspections would happen throughout March, particularly a much more deep inventory of all the equipment and taking ownership of various assets. I've mentioned the transition team is fully formed. Budgets are being are underway right now. We know we have revenue opportunities. We are anxious to pursue those revenue opportunities. What we want to do is take time to study what our future in the container business is on a discrete footprint around berth 604 and 605, but also be able to pursue those revenue opportunities on essentially the footprint that's outside of what we think the future container operation will be. So parking, auto storage is a great example. It's a great long short-term revenue opportunity, and AWC has already been interested in having discussions with us about that. Break bulk operations at 603, we would love to get something going very soon on that. We plan to do a major shipper outreach meeting, kind of tearing off the governor's trade and logistics initiative. That is planned in April. We want to reset our relationship with labor. I'm glad to see folks here today. We know that the future success is directly tied. We have to go find our market niche, which, as Bill said, is changing and is more narrow today than it's ever been. But in order ever to have a chance of getting there, we've got to change our relationships with labor, and we're looking forward to having more discussions and resetting our relationship there. We want to move as quickly as we can, but we do need to engage in a long-range plan process. We would love to have commissioners involved in this directly if there's interest, but certainly we would be reporting back to you by the end of the year with more definitive answers around what is that market niche, what's the geography for the business, and what's the business model. So we know the business model that won't work for us. That's what we were doing prior to the lease with ICTSI. We know we need some form of lease with a private terminal operator who is a PMA member who can hire the ILWU and has good relationships there. But the kind of the four corners of that value proposition, when you're starting with no cargo and no volume, that's going to be, I think, the challenge of what that business model is in the future. But we're anxious to get started with that. You know, at the end of the day, we want this transportation infrastructure to be utilized to support shippers throughout Oregon. And that's our mission. And unfortunately, the last few years, we've not been able really to use the infrastructure to support shipper access. We want to view T6 in the context of the Northwest. There are access points through the Port of Seattle, Tacoma. There's an access point at T6. The market needs to be served, and the market needs to have an efficient way to get to those access points. And that's kind of the context that we want to view what our future looks like. Stakeholder committee, we need to form a stakeholder committee of folks in the industry, shippers. We would like labor involved in that to give us advice as we work on what the future plan is going to be. And again, the goal to report back to you ideally by the end of this calendar year, but hopefully possibly early into 2018 with a plan.
So questions before we ask any, I'd just like to say, I think it's absolutely a product of yours and others' hard work to get us to a position where we are able to look forward rather than backward at T6. And so you are all commended for that effort. I know it's not been easy, and there's lots of work still to be done, but thank you for that.
Thank you.
I think
that the timeline in terms of reporting back to the commission is too long. I think we need a report on a pretty regular basis, every couple of months. And I think that we'll select a couple of members from the commission to participate in that, because I think this is a significant enough undertaking that we should have some direct involvement like we have on other pieces of capital improvements and whatnot at the airport, as well as harkening back to our concessionaire employees in the port. We've had a couple of commissioners involved in that activity as well. So this is a perfect one to have a couple of commissioners. Glad you asked for that support. So other questions or comments from commissioners?
Thank you. One comment and one question, or more like your response to what I understand. I think this is a very good step forward, as you say. Yes, looking at the past alone is not going to, resolve the situations. I think it's a good step forward. So I think it's a job well done. Now, in terms of looking back, which I usually don't do from a business perspective, but the whole genesis of what we have today is that, am I correct in thinking that that labor dispute having to do with the plugging, unplugging, the refrigerated containers, that's the whole genesis of what we have today?
How to answer this? I guess the genesis, in my opinion, is this. When prior to this lease, we were the only, quote, operating container port on the West Coast. And we were losing boatloads of money in the course of that. So it worked well for labor. It worked well for the terminal operator that we had to hire to stand in front of us. It didn't work for us. It worked pretty well for shippers. And we were subsidizing the operation of Terminal 6 by selling land. And we were out of land. And so either we were going to find a new business model or we were going to go out of business. And if you just imagine the pressure that that creates, you can begin to appreciate somewhere that subsidy had to disappear somewhere, right? Because the state and others, we are not in a position to continue to do that. And so it clearly created, the opportunity for tension. And I would say the issue around jurisdiction, which is what this was, is not a minor item. There was a change in control of the terminal, and that's really what surfaced the challenges that, lead us here today. I would also say, though, that there are many other forces at work. One thing leads to another thing. The hip bone is connected to the thigh bone. The nature of this business has changed so substantially over the course of the last 5 years that it does present itself as a huge challenge. So that was the spark.
Yes,
but yeah,
there are additional factors.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. I understand.
Other questions or comments?
I have two questions. One is about the cost to operate. I understand that we've continued to do maintenance there, which we've been reimbursed for, even though there are no operations. Obviously, there are costs, which we'll have to take on. I want to get a sense of what those are. And then you also mentioned finding an operator that's a member of PMA, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and Bill kind of alluded to the part of the problem of our prior operating model as a public port authority, even though we were operating the terminal. This is prior to the lease with ICTSI. We were not in a position because we were not a PMA member. They are the employer group that is that collectively bargains with the ILWU. And so you need a PMA member standing in between the port authority and the labor group in order to hire the labor to operate the vessels and operate the facility. And so that's the kind of the background on that. our maintenance services that we had provided under the lease that now would no longer be reimbursed. When we had a fully functioning operation, it was roughly close to what the rent was, which is $4 to $4.5 million of reimbursable revenue cost back to the port. We would not have that today, but when you don't have any cargo flowing over the operation, the cost profile goes way down. But we did have, you know, we had a good discussion about this in task force. The budget that you'll see now with this change, even with an empty facility, as an example, stormwater fees have to get paid because we've got 200 acres of pavement and about $1 million of stormwater fees is possible. We hope maybe we can work these numbers down. But so it's a budget even without cargo activity and economic activity that we can't afford to burn through for too many years, which is really why we needed a good 2.5 years or so from ICTSI in this payment that they're giving us to allow us to quickly get to a point where we can go and get new revenue generating opportunities.
And, you know, I think it's also worth noting that if you did a net present value calculation on the lease versus the deal, we're getting essentially the net present value of the remaining. Once you subtract out all of the anomalies like maintenance, and so it's a kind of a no harm, no foul. We get an opportunity, and it's an opportunity to take a look at the future of this terminal and create some financially, economically viable services. No guarantees, you know, and we're giving up security in return for opportunity and opportunity to really address our basic mission. And I think that's kind of what's on the table here.
I had some further comments. First, I wanted to commend you for your work. I think this is a monumental accomplishment. And given there's a window of opportunity, there's a couple of things I wanted to emphasize. I think it is important to have commissioner involvement in this because our constituents are very interested in this topic. Of all the topics since I've been on the commission that I've gotten questions on a very regular basis, it's this topic. Additionally, and it does sound like you have this in mind, because you have this opportunity, I would strongly suggest that we do a very strategically focused long-range business plan and think, you know, outside of what would normally occur to us as ways to use this. And it sounds like you're on that track, but I wanted to recommend that we stay on that track and take this opportunity to look both at the macroeconomic trends as well as the local economic trends and find out where the optimal point of intersection is there. And then reflecting on some of the remarks that I've heard, and I do think as you look at that, it would behoove us as a body to look at the indicators that we can kind of watch along the way so that perhaps we could be more proactive if we saw issues arising that we hadn't expected. So I think part of it is not only a robust long-range business plan, but also understanding how we'll measure our progress and look for these, you know, unintended factors that may occur.
That's great. Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Is there a motion and second to approve the recommendation?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks for the presentation, and we look forward to positive progress in the future.
Thank you.
And that's the full agenda, so the meeting is adjourned.